Hi, welcome to VLectures. We are on chapter 14, Banker-Customer Relationship of Banking Fundamentals. What do you understand by a banker-customer relationship? Is it a casual relationship or is it a formal relationship? Can a banker have a casual relationship with a customer? The answer would be no. For a simple reason, any transaction between a banker and a customer has to be originated after a formal contract. When it comes to account opening, the banker and the customer enter into a contract when the customer signs in an account opening form and the banker in turn certifies that the details required for account opening has been submitted and opens an account into a system. The contractual agreement, which is in the form of account opening form and has a mention of all the terms and conditions, comes into play once the account gets opened. When we studied the evolution of banking, both in the world as well as in our country, we have seen the range of services and the products offered by the banks to the customer have changed over a period of time with different evolutions. We have seen those days of barter system to the post-independence era, to the ushering of the new era from the 1900s till the modern times, wireless banking. The total model of brick and mortar has been totally changed into click banking. What I'm trying to say is, whatever type of banking or whatever type of products and services that are availed by the customer, based on that, the relationship of the banker and the customer originates. A simple example to take is, suppose the customer wants to avail a locker facility. The contractual relationship would be different. Whether we have a name to give such contractual relationship? Yes, our Indian Contract Act has a name for different type of contractual relationships. So in our chapter on banking customer relationship, we are not just going to understand the relationship in a casual manner, but we are also going to understand the relationship in a formal manner. Based on the type of products and services availed by the customer, we are going to name a particular relationship which again finds its reference in a law made in our country. So friends, let's begin with banker-customer relationship right from the earlier days. A banker who was acting as a goldsmith when the banking was not formalized, as we had seen in the ancient India as well as in the ancient world, was seen as a reliable depository. This goldsmith used to accept gold specifically for the purpose of safekeeping. When these customers wanted to travel from one part of the city to another part of a city or a country, the problem of carrying such huge gold with them faced great threats of robbery and different floods, cyclones, and other natural calamities. The solution they found out was deposit their gold with one goldsmith who had an arrangement with a goldsmith in another country or other region where this particular customer wants to go. This goldsmith, who accepts a deposit at a receipt, used to give him a receipt which, when produced to another goldsmith, will allow him access of the gold which he had deposited in his local region. So here a depository is one who receives a sealed package of valuables for safe custody and undertakes it to return it unopened. So this type of service of taking valuables as a safe custody is still followed on by bankers in addition to its main business of banking, which we find defined under Section 5B of the Banking Regulation Act 1949. In addition to all those functions as defined in Section 5B of Banking Regulation Act, Section 6 of Banking Regulation Act also defined some of the ancillary functions which a banker can perform. Each function will have a different sort of relationship, so we are going to cover all that also in this chapter. Banks continue to act as a custodian even today, but that is only a subsidiary function because the main business of banking is to accept money for the purpose of lending or investing, as well as repayable of the public money on demand. The banker also acts as a trustee. That is, it receives money and uses it according to the terms of the trust and has to account in detail for everything that has been done with the money. Is this the main function of a bank? No, not at all. This again is a subsidiary function of a bank, because the main function of a bank is to accept deposit for the purpose of lending. And during this period, the bank comes to know there are different requirements of the customer, and one amongst them is acting as a trustee, wherein the bank receives money and uses it according to the terms of the trust for the benefit of the trust and has to account details of everything that has been done with the money. Over a period of time, a banker has learned to render various services. When we say various services, it includes its main banking service as well as the subsidiary banking service. Some of the types of services have been already listed as a proper banking service under Section 5B of Banking Regulation Act, where most of the other services which are in the form of ancillary services or subsidiary services are listed under Section 6 of the Banking Regulation Act 1949. Let's see what are the various types of services that a bank are offering. The primary function of accepting deposits for the purpose of lending or investing, as defined in Section 5B of the Banking Regulation Act, forms the primary business of banking. Ancillary services like collection of checks, safe custody, remittances, credit cards, tax collection, investment facilities, executor and trustees, gift checks, etc., are defined under Section 6 of the Banking Regulation Act 1949. So we see the core components of the wide range of products and services are included under Section 5B and Section 6 of the Banking Regulation Act 1949. Even though we find most of the services mentioned under Section 5B of Banking Regulation Act and Section 6 of Banking Regulation Act, the range of services offered by banks differs from bank to bank depending upon the size and type of the bank. Like a large bank like a State Bank of India, the ICICI Bank, the HDFC Bank, or some of the public sector banks like the Punjab National Bank will have a big bouquet of products and services, whereas a smaller bank may not be able to have the complete technology for offering such wide range of services. They may enter into some co-branding arrangements with these bigger banks and try to offer the services for their customer, or may not at all offer the products and services, at they may not afford the cost for providing such products and services. The new business of the banks. RBI says parabanking services, in which your insurance facility, your mutual funds, and all of the products as listed in this parabanking activity, a new term coined by the Reserve Bank of India, is being popularly offered by most of the banks in addition to the services as defined under Section 5B and Section 6 of the Banking Regulation Act 1949. During recently, lots of technology innovations have been introduced into the banking system, and because of which most of the traditional products have taken a new shape in the form of technology products. More and more concepts are introduced into the banking system by which a universal banking product or the universal banking style has been taking shape in our Indian space. The banking ecosystem is getting wider and wider with a large range of products and services. During recent years, commercial banks have started rendering services in the insurance sector called or coined as bank assurance. Recently, there was a news that instead of acting just a corporate insurance agent of a single insurance provider, the banker will be getting facility of offering its own insurance products or offering a wide range of insurance products of various insurance providers. So in addition to the counters offering only the banking products, now the bankers can offer wide range of insurance products offered by various insurance providers across the counter. It wouldn't take much time to see that scenario on the banking space. The banks also offer mutual funds across the counter. It is not necessary that they should have their own AMC or a mutual fund company. It can have its own subsidiaries, or it can tie up with various mutual fund companies and simply collect the applications for this mutual fund companies and send it back to the mutual fund companies for final processing. But a bank earns a huge income in the form of fee income. Then we come to the participants of depositories. This is a big revolution. A depository system allows converting of physical certificates into electronic shares, and the need was felt because of lots of malpractices happening in conversion of physical certificates into the electronic forms, or while transferring the physical certificates from one buyer to another, from another, and this used to take lots of time for sending the physical certificates from one person to the company and from the company to the final buyer. To eliminate all these hardships faced by the shareholder, this depository system was introduced, and this has become a wonderful system for storing all the physical certificates in the electronic form. Not only that, the customers can have a tie-up with any broker, open a trading account, do a transaction of buy or sell, and again get back the credit and debit effect into its Demat account. So banks acting as a depository participant of a depository are eligible to open Demat account on behalf of customer, and most of the bank are marketing their products in the form of 3-in-1 accounts. One account for saving, that is for transfer of funds, one account for storing the electronic shares, which is a Demat account, and the final account is a trading account, which is maintained with a broker. Sometimes this broker can be an independent broker or a broker which is a subsidiary of the parent bank. So finally, what happens over here is the 3-in-1 account means all the funds are kept with the bank, all the securities are kept with the bank, and the trading commission of the brokerage also vests with the subsidiary of the bank. So this is a win-win situation for the parent bank as well as the subsidiaries of the parent bank. So this is also generating new sort of business, because when you actually maintain the Demat account, you again earn a fee income in the form of the annual custody charges, the AMC charges, the transaction charges, and ultimately this contributes to the fee income of the bank. Wealth management and advisory services. Most of the high net worth customers have huge money parked in their bank account, but they are not able to utilize that money in an efficient manner. Here again, bank uses its advisory services. It hires top advisors in the form of relationship managers. These relationship managers take care of the entire portfolio of these high net worths. The huge funds are deployed efficiently and effectively. A good revenue or return is generated for the customer, and in turn, bank earns a good fee income for managing the portfolios of these high net worth customers. And when we say high net worth customers, it is not restricted only to the ultra high, because These services are also segregated into different levels in the form of priority customer, in the form of other value-added customers for which the services in different flavors are offered, the ultimate objective being to earn revenue or the fee income for the bank, which constitutes almost 40% of the revenue of the total income generated by the bank for a particular year. What are the services offered to the consumer? There are many persons who do utilize services of the bank but do not maintain an account with the bank. Are they not having a relationship with the bank? For example, you want a demand draft for a specific purpose, but you don't have an account with your bank, which is nearest to you. You go to the bank, you fill a demand draft application form, you pay the money, the bank issues a demand draft to you. Are you a customer? No. Has the bank issued a demand draft to you? Yes. Is there a relationship between you as a demand draft purchaser and the banker? There is a relationship. We will understand what is the naming of this relationship in our subsequent slides. So overall, what we are trying to understand over here is the bankers were offering different types of products and services right from the ancient age, which have been developed and redesigned with the help of human thinking, topped by the technology development, and the same traditional products have taken different shapes with the technology developments, giving lots of comforts and convenience to the customers. Some of them have a direct day-to-day relationship with the banker. Some of them avail some of the services without having direct contractual relationship with the banker. And that's how different types of relationship originate. And we will be having different names based on the customs, based on the laws that define the different types of relationship between a banker and a customer. And hence we are going to start our next slide with a contractual relationship between the banker and the customer. The essence of a banker-customer relationship starts with the contract, and this contract starts right from the time the customer fills in the account opening form, duly signed by him and accepted by the banker with the official signature indicating acceptance of the contract. Now, what do we want to know from a contractual relationship? The relationship between a customer and a banker is contractual and begins as soon as the customer engages a banker to render a service. The relationship between a banker and a customer depends on the activities, products or services provided by bank to its customers or availed by the customer. Trust. Trust plays a very important role in building a healthy relationship between a banker and a customer. Even though we talk about a contractual relationship, many of the activities are done between trust between a customer and a banker. A banker has to accommodate a customer, and a customer also has to understand a banker in order to get the transaction flowing in a seamless manner. Banking is a trust-based relationship. Numerous kinds of relationships between the bank and the customer are established on the basis of the type of transaction between a bank and its customers. Such transaction can happen between a bank and a consumer also. We have already seen the difference between a customer and a consumer. A customer has to have a contract where a consumer can simply avail any of the banking service without being a customer or without having a contractual relationship such as opening an account. The relationship is based on certain terms and conditions, which in turn confers rights and obligations both on the part of the banker and the customer. The moment we say a contract, It establishes rights of the banker, rights of the customer. It puts an onus on the bank to fulfill certain obligations. It also puts an onus on the customer to fulfill certain obligations. So rights and obligations are conferred upon both the banker and the customer, and both are obliged to fulfill the terms and conditions of the contract. If we have to classify the relationship between a banker and a customer, we can classify the relationship into two main heads. One is a general relationship, and the second one will be a special relationship. Now, what do you mean by a general relationship? In our Banking Regulation Act, we have seen Section 5B defines what exactly a banking business means, simply excepting for the purpose of lending. Whereas Section 6 of the Banking Regulation Act makes a mention of various other activities a banker can undertake during the course of its business. So here we would say relationship arising out of the two main functions, that is accepting of deposits for the purpose of lending or investing, as defined under Section 5B of the Banking Regulation Act 1949, can be termed as general relationship. And all those activities which are defined under Section 6 of Banking Regulation Act 1949 can be termed as special relationship. So we have a clear-cut categorization of relationship based on its definition as main banking activities under Section 5B of Banking Regulation Act and Section 6 of Banking Regulation Act 1949. We are going to dwell into deeper meaning of each of the relationship. We are first going to take examples of different types of general relationship, and then we are going to move on to different types of special relationship. This relationship has specific meaning and specific definition in our regulations like the Indian Contract Act. Based on whatever type of activity a banker is going to do while offering the products and services, the meaning gives rise to a definition of the regulation. So let's understand the classification and then dwell on each and every type of the entity involved in each type of relationship. General relationship comprises of two main categories. Number one, the debtor and creditor. Whenever a customer deposits money with a banker, he automatically becomes a creditor and a banker automatically becomes a debtor. So debtor-creditor relationship is established in the very first activity of banking, that is accepting of deposits. What is creditor-debtor relationship? Exactly opposite of the debtor-creditor relationship. In a debtor, the bank becomes a debtor because of accepting of deposits from the customer, whereas in a creditor-debtor relationship, the bank becomes a creditor because of giving loan to the customer. So whenever a customer gets loan from the bank, he becomes a debtor because he will have to repay the loan amount in installments, whereas the bank becomes a creditor because he has lent the money to the borrower, which is repayable on the basis of the loan agreement executed between the customer or the borrower and the banker. So here again we see, whether it's a debtor-creditor or a creditor-debtor, the relationship gets birth out of a contractual agreement. for depositing money, the customer has to open an account, sign the account opening terms and conditions. The same way, whenever he wants to take a loan, he has to sign a loan agreement, comply with the terms and conditions mentioned in the loan agreement, and that's how the creditor-debtor relationship is also established. We are going to see more of this in the next slides. Now let's see what are the special relationships examples. Bank acts as a trustee. Bank and the customer enter into a relationship which defines the relationship as a bailee and a bailer. Next, the lessor and the lessee, agent and the principal, and finally as a custodian. Friends, all this relationship have different meanings and are specifically defined under different sections of various regulations. Since a bank offers different relationship, different services under different capacity, and this type of service exactly matches with those defined under various sections or various regulations, we can clearly define such relationship by a special name as defined in the regulations. So let's see each one of them, starting with the general relationship, and then we move on to each type of special relationship also. Let's begin with the debtor-creditor relationship. The preliminary relationship of a banker and a customer is that of a debtor and creditor. When a customer opens an account with a bank, the moment he deposits money in his account, the bank becomes a debtor of the customer and the customer a creditor. Why does this happen? The moment a customer deposits the money, it is not as if the bank can keep it for its own sake. This money has to be returned to the customer based on the type of agreement he has entered into, that is, whether he has kept the deposits to be payable on demand or he has kept the deposit as a fixed deposit to be payable after a particular term. Whatever mode of payment, whether it's a demand deposit or a term deposit, the banker will have to repay, and since the repayment has to happen, it perfectly suits the definition of a debtor. Hence, the banker is a debtor because it has to repay the deposit accepted from the customer. And since the customer has given his money for deposit with the bank, the customer will be called a creditor. The banker is not a depository or a trustee in this case, because the money deposited becomes a debt due from the banker to the customer. Please note, in case of a depository or a trustee, the money is kept for the benefit of the depositor, whereas in case of a deposit kept for repayment on demand or after a particular term, the money is exclusively kept for the repayment purpose. The banker is obliged to honor his customer's check drawn upon his balance in so far as the balance is sufficient and available. So it is not enough to just take the deposit, but as and when the customer makes a demand through a check, through a withdrawal slip, or even by a letter in a specified format with his signature as appearing in the bank record, a banker has to pay and comply with the instructions given by the customer. We have a famous case of Welji, Lakhamse and Company versus Dr. Banerjee. In this case, the Bombay High Court had held that the relationship between a banker and its customer is that of a debtor and creditor, and any amount due by the banker to the customer cannot be claimed by the customer from the bank as a preferential creditor if the bank is wound up.